It's time for the fastest 3 hours in morning talk radio, live and local. It's the Ed Dean Radio Show. Here he is, the headliner, the showstopper, the main event. Here's Ed Dean.
4 minutes after the top of the hour, good morning, everybody. Ed Dean gets back in town, and the downside is everybody looks the same. Anyways.
Hey, Ed Dean got back in town, and nobody noticed.
That's even better. I wasn't looking at you when I said that, by the way. I was looking at Roger. What's all you? Man, yeah, I'm
still dealing with the sleep deprivation.
What do you mean deprivation, man?
You know, you
got to learn to pace yourself. Do 5 miles a day. Okay. You know, go to, I don't usually go to bed. I went to bed like 11:30 last night. I got up around 3:30. So.
Yeah, 1 o'clock.
But I was 1 o'clock.
I was up at 4:30, though.
What are you doing, CNN again?
No.
Well, was that fun?
Yeah, it was, you know, just exciting to be on. It was exciting.
So anyway, good morning, everybody. Ed Dean, 5 minutes after the top of the hour. Good to be back. Just had a little bit of a funeral to go to over the weekend.
Our condolences.
I appreciate that. But you want to know something? It was a good... You know, somebody said, this is not the beginning of the end. It's the starting of a memory.
Yeah.
Interesting. I know some of you that may be a little divorced probably don't want to have that type of a memory, but anyway, we can anyway. But hey, we have a good time. It is the only live and local show anywhere of its kind, anywhere in Jacksonville. It is the three fastest hours. And this, as I always say, AJ, I'm like a male.
Okay.
Because I'm all talk.
All right.
This is all talk radio. And we are ready to go, and we are going to have an exciting 3 hours. But before we kick it off right here on FM 101.1 AM 600, WBOB here with the top of the news. Roger Henderson, good morning.
Okay, here's what's going on. Back in August, Jacksonville City Council President Anna Lopez Brochet called for an inventory of all Confederate monuments on city-owned property with the intention of asking for them to be removed. Now, Brochet says she has the inventory list. The list shows all three Civil War-related monuments and eight historic markers on city property. If the monuments are to be removed, it won't be easy. There will still be a lot of hurdles, such as finding a museum or school that would take the monuments if they are removed. Critics also have questioned how the memorials will be removed and put in places like museums or universities. According to the latest numbers from the Florida Office of Insurance Regulation, property insurance claims from Hurricane Irma have approached $4.6 billion in estimated losses. As of Friday, there were 671,000 claims that have been filed in all 67 counties, with Miami-Dade having the largest number with over 87,000. On Monday, a Florida Senate Environmental Committee approved a pair of bills for the 2018 legislative session that will require at least $50 million a year for Northeast Florida environmental projects. Some of those items include beach nourishment and inlet management projects and money to go towards helping restore the St. Johns River, its tributaries, and the Keystone Heights Lake region. The money would come from the 2014 voter-approved constitutional amendment that called for setting aside a portion of the dock stamp taxes to go to land and water conservation.
Email address at WBOB.com, at WBOB.com. Phone lines 904-222-8255, 904-222-8255. $4.6 billion. Now, this is kind of interesting. This is a very weird number here. This is the number based on property damage. This is based on the market that they've seen through insurance adjusters. The state is asking for $23-plus billion from the feds,
right,
to cover costs. Now, let me set this story up. This is very interesting. The insurer of last resort is known as Citizens Insurance. This is where, if you can't afford to buy insurance, it's supplemented by those that own a property, casualty insurance, or even a car insurance. In other words, you're subsidizing people.
Now, I remember at one point back, people who lived right on the coast at the beach, they couldn't even get insurance. Would these cover these people as well?
They'll cover them, but the point is for wealthy people, you and I are still subsidizing it. Mm-hmm. So we've always talked about that if there's a heavy category 4 or 5 or storm after storm after storm that came and wanted to hit Florida, Florida would be in dire straits. There's a $52 million budget in state government. That number has shrunk. It originally was going to be about, maybe a couple hundred million. That number has shrunk. The state of Florida is, when you look at all actuality, would have to have the largest tax increase in Florida history to cover that cost. So instead, what happens is they ask the federal government to come in through FEMA and other areas to try to bail them out. So many people would sit back and say, well, why not, Ed? Well, here's the point. Somebody's got to pay for it. So Florida gets on the hook for all this. They put government, this all, by the way, happened underneath Governor Jeb Bush, the insurer of last resort, Citizens Insurance, government-run insurance company. And guess what? Storms hit. Somebody's going to have to pick up the tab. So this is a very costly hurricane, not as bad as we saw with Hurricane Andrew and things like that. But the claims, again, of course, the biggest one is down in Miami-Dade, and they didn't get hit the worst. Mm. So it's interesting. But I just thought I'd throw that out there. That's kind of some of the big news as well. Also, Roger just brought up about $50 million a year for Northeast Florida Environmental Project. That does include beach renourishment. A lot of that will go to restore the St. John's and its tributaries and the other areas out there as well. I will tell you, for years, Roger, this is a very interesting debate about beach renourishment. This hits a lot of chords with people, or should we say nerve, because you get a lot of people that sit back and say, listen, I live in Orange Park. I live west of I-95. I don't even come close to going to the beach. And why is my taxpayer dollars paying for beach renourishment for people out there that can afford it?
That's a good question. That is a very good question. I guess there could be an argument made that the beaches, you know, contribute to the entire regional economy. Yeah. You know, people come in, they do their conventions at the hotels, at the beach, etc.
But, I mean, when you go to Jacksonville Beach, it is one of the nicest beaches out there. I mean, literally, it's 100-plus yards of from the ocean, from where the tide comes up, mm-hmm. to almost to where many of the people, where the dunes are at. People play volleyball, go for walks, whatever. And I've seen charity groups. I've seen people out there doing their CrossFits. I like beach renourishment because I think it does add to the economy. I think a lot of people sit back and say, there isn't much beach here. I may go somewhere else. One of the things that I always thought years as a reporter that many of the environmentalists like it, because it keeps the beaches going, and many of the environmentalists say no. All it does is just pumps up a lot of sand, and it messes up the reefs and things like that. I just find this a very interesting debate. Do we need to continue to taxpayer fund beach renourishment? Maybe there is in some areas, but at what level of the cost are you doing it?
I think we should, in my opinion. I believe it's important to the economy. And if we didn't do that, then there could possibly be, like they have in some communities, no public access to the beach.
Yeah. And in some cases, unless they're private, where do you not have public access to the beach?
Well, that could be the argument made if they say, okay, we're
yeah, you just can't drive your cars on there.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, no volleyball playing. No one can go swimming unless you pay an admission, because we pay out of our pockets.
You know, but here's an interesting question. If you're going to end up paying for this, should this be done as a consumer fee? If you're going to go to the beach, should you pay many cases along the east coast of Florida? You pay a parking toll.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to suffice the cost and make sure that the tab pays for itself, should we charge people a fee? This has been something that's been asked.
Mm-hmm.
Should we charge people a fee to use the beaches in order to pay or to recoup the money that local Duval County and St. John's and many other counties will pay for beach renourishment?
That's a good question.
I mean, we have a bed tax in some of these areas at 8.99 cents, and some of the, or 8.9%, excuse me, or 8.9 cents, excuse me, and some of the many cities here in the state of Florida that help pay for tourism costs and things of that nature. That way they say that, well, you know, the local citizen doesn't pay for it. I'm thinking that if you want to recoup your money, maybe this is, I'm not advocating this, I'm just saying if you're going to float the idea, that probably will be floated around, and, you know, who knows where it goes from that. So Anna Brashe came out and says, hey, I've got my big list of inventory. I'm looking at Roger. Three Civil War related monuments.
I was confused when I heard her, you know, call for that. I was thinking, where are they?
Yeah.
You know, I've lived here for, you know, quite a while, and I don't remember seeing
any. By the way, did you know? I mean, and you and I are, so you and I talk about this as a black guy. Did you know that there was Confederate monuments in Heming Park?
Did not know, but I don't go to Heming Park a lot anyway.
That's my whole point. I needed that. I'm like, well, I'm not even gonna, listen.
And I think I found out recently that Heming was a guy in the Civil War, which I didn't know that.
Yeah, Heming, I don't know. So, I mean, like, I'm a student of history, and I don't even acknowledge it in a park.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to move him to a museum, but this is the whole point. I know that they could use Hurricane Irma, whatever. The bottom line is she did this almost 2 months ago, as you reported. And she waited for the right timing. I think she stepped her foot into it. I think they've done poll numbers. Many people don't go along with this. But, you know, if you want to take them down and put them in a museum and offer both sides, I am all up for that. I would use it as tourism money, as a field trip for classroom, for schools out there to let them do an education on both sides. This is where it ought to be done, instead of taking them down to Heming Park and dealing with all the homeless people down there and some of the other areas. So that's what I would do. But many critics have questioned whether or not these will be put in museums or universities. My point is Parks and Recreation took forever, almost 2 months, to let her know that there are three areas of Civil War markers.
There are eight markers and three monuments.
Yeah, three.
What the difference is, I'm not quite sure, but, you know, altogether, I guess 11.
And by the way, if you don't think if anybody recognized a monument, you think they recognized a marker?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so all right. Listen, we got a lot to get to. Jameel Hill, do you want you sports guy? Jameel Hill?
Sometimes.
She calls for a boycott.
Oh, the CNN, the ESPN lady.
Yeah, so we got Al Sharpton on this, like it really matters. He's a fountain of misinformation, but we'll talk to him here in a little bit. Not talk to him, but we'll listen to some of the clips there.
I met him once, by the way.
Did you? Mm-hmm. Impressed?
Not really.
Okay. Did anybody ask him that question about you? He first said, yeah. So anyway, you got to have a little humor here. And we got a lot of the clips, the DACA versus the wall, who's going to win on that issue. The guns issue is back up in the debate again. We're going to get to all of this. 904-222-8255. Ed Dean, good to be back with everybody right here. Mornings from 6 to 9, 14 minutes after the hour on FM 101.1 AM 600 WBOB. Minutes after the hour. Good morning, Ed Dean, right here on FM 101.1, AM 600, WBOB. Dr. AJ Davis hanging out with us.
He can't get away from playing the hits.
He is the man of the hits. That's right, man.
That's right. We got the hit music right here.
AJ and I, by the way, Roger Henderson, anything over 1978, AJ says he doesn't recognize, man. It's got to be Steely Dan.
No, I know some newer songs.
Yeah. AJ, where's that country music hat? Doc, I've missed Dr. Davis, man, for about 4 days. So it's good to see him. And Roger Henderson with the news, 18 minutes after the hour, 904-222-8255. We're going to get into about boycotting the NFL. No, now it's boycott. No, it is boycott the NFL, but from the left side. We'll get to that in a few moments. I know. It's going to get interesting here in a few moments. Who's going to end up compromising on DACA and the border wall? Is it going to be Trump? Even some of the Republicans say yes. And the issue of guns, we are just a gun-happy country. We'll get into all this. Mind you, a little bit of the church lady right there. Just a gun-happy country. We're going to get into all this here in a little bit. Let's go to Kenny. Kenny, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Ed. Hey, I'm going to try to get three quick points in and then go from there. Our good friend George that calls the show, I heard him on a national program. It's been a few months, but he being a scientist and all, he claims you can put sand up in geosynchronous orbit, and that will actually reflect the sun. So if that's true, what I realized, you know, when we had these hurricanes, is go ahead and see if there's a way we could put that sand right over off the coast of Africa where these hurricanes form. Okay, so, you know, it'd be a big political deal, and I'm not sure how you do it. I'd like to know if the sun could still filter through.
Hold on, wait, back up. Educate me for a second. Why would you put it off the coast of Africa?
Well, that's where the hurricanes form. They form over there, and as they're coming across, they build up speed.
Let me ask a question. What about the hurricanes that form in the Gulf? What about the hurricanes that form off the Bahamas?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're right. Okay, you got me there.
Asking. I wasn't trying to get you.
He does have a very good point.
My whole point is, if there's money to be made with this, why do I want to stop at Africa?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe, you know, it'd be great if you could just do it during the summer months, and then, you know, when it's not hurricane season, retract the sand or whatever. You got maybe a solar blanket or whatever, you know. But you would have dark spots if you completely block the sun out, and then you don't have plankton growing in the ocean. So it would be a big environmental thing. Let me get my other two points in. I'm a little bit of an amateur inventor myself, so I've been thinking that we could have a hurricane berm wall all the way around Florida and up the coast. I know George has probably talked about it and other people, but I'm thinking you might even be able to make it out of recycled plastic. Now, the way this thing would look, think pyramid, big pyramid, but it only has to be on one side, and you could actually have it under the water, and if there's a way to raise it up, if you can get it up high enough, this could be, let's just say you don't want to mess with the shrimpers, but maybe about 5 miles out. Yeah. I'm not really sure. Anyway, but the recycled plastic.
All right.
You ever seen the wood, recycled wood, they use on benches and stuff? that'd be an industry. Last point would be the some kind of tax for all this hurricane damage. We have to be able to have that money in the bank for restore, you know, redoing the beaches and all that. So I'll be interested to see what George has to say and anybody else, but there's no reason why we couldn't do that.
I think I would be interested in what the George doesn't have to say. So anyway,
well, exactly.
I just can't. George is a friend, man. Good to talk to you, man.
I
feel like we're on coast to coast.
Well,
coast to George.
You know,
Curry,
I tend to be somewhat of a science geek, Ed.
On the wild card line.
That's a very interesting point about putting sand in a geosynchronous orbit over a desert area, for example. That could turn, you know, who knows where that's a
desert.
Let's
get Mr. Sandman.
Into a tropical paradise.
East of the Rockies style.
I love you, Kenny. Come on, man. We're having fun.
Well, Kenny's a great caller.
By the way, plan on our insurance rates going up, our homeowner's insurance.
On the wild card line. Draw.
little. Come on, you got to have a little fun.
So
I
you can do that.
Call.
Insurance rates go up.
Yeah, they will after the surgery.
904-222-8255. 904-222-8255. So, let's get to some of the big national issues out there. The NFL, how many of y'all, did you see what happened with Mike Pence over the weekend in Indianapolis Colts?
Indianapolis Colts, the Colts didn't, no members of the team took a knee, but the visiting
the
team,
Niners.
The 49ers, did, he walked out.
So let me get to a lot of national news here. So,
some people called it a stunt.
You know what, it probably was a stunt.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I'm pretty sure he expected
it. But what those guys are doing on the sidelines is a stunt too.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, why is it that one team decides not to do it? But the other team decides to do it. I mean, if they all agree that they've all been oppressed. So anyway, so let's say that Mike Pence did it as a stunt. Big deal. I mean, I don't care if he was supposed to be there 2 months ahead of time. Big deal. I mean, I think he probably would have sat during the game. He came to show respect to Peyton Manning, one of the greatest of all time. So all that. But this even goes a little bit further. Is the NFL being hit by this? Some would say, yes. Some of the latest numbers that we have seen where the website on some of those areas have gone down. There's a story from our friends of it at Salem Broadcasting that, where was this story I'm looking at? ESPN says that, what was it, some of the numbers of Monday Night Football are down a little bit. The website, I think traffic estimate according to some of those by National Review, that the NFL website is seeing a huge drop. Washington Examiner saying that the player unions claim that the protests do not disrespect the flag. So this is what happened pretty much. Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, America's team, whatever. So he came out and said, okay, listen, if you're going to kneel down, you ain't playing in my team, you ain't playing in my game whatsoever. So Jemele Hill, who had made comments weeks ago about, I don't know, Trump and race and everything else, nothing happened to her. Well, then she tweeted out by quote saying, by drawing a line in the sand, Jerry Jones puts his players under more scrutiny and threw them under the bus. She says, if rationale behind his stance and his stance keeps the fan base happy, make him see that he underestimated how his fan base feels. She urged paying customers, fans of the Dallas Cowboys, to boycott his advertisers if they did not agree with Jones. Here's the problem with all this. ESPN, the network that's employed Hill, agreed to pay $15.2 billion in 2011 to air NFL football, according to the New York Times, which means it's extremely valuable to ESPN on who's going to play, i.e., the Dallas Cowboys. So TMZ caught up with Al Sharpton and asked him about these comments. Here's clip number one. Asked him about these comments about Jemele Hill trying to make this a race issue. And how would you respond to her urging members of those out there that may not be agreeable to Jerry Jones and those that agree with not kneeling down during the NFL national anthem that they should boycott? Here was his response. Clip number one.
Jemele Hill and anyone else has the right to express their views. To try and silence her will not silence many of us that feel what Jerry Jones has done is put the Cowboy players in a position of either I must sell my right to express my feelings, my freedom of speech, my right to protest in order to do my trade and do my business. That is, in my opinion, disrespecting what the flag's supposed to stand for. We supposed to be a country where the First Amendment gives you freedom of speech. So he's saying if you want to play on my team, you suspend your freedom of speech, your right to protest. ESPN is saying if Jamil says, well, the advertisers ought to know your feelings, then she's going to be silenced and suspended. She did not tell them to boycott.
Ah, yes, she did. She tweeted. She told them to boycott. Remember, this was the argument. And now, Roger, you remember, AJ will tell you. AJ never said this. We didn't urge. I mean, many of the listeners out here in Jacksonville said, hey, we're going to boycott. We're going to burn our jerseys. We never urged them to boycott. We sat back and said that if you feel that your displacement or your dissatisfaction with the Jacksonville Jaguars and you want to take it out on Foot Locker and knock yourself out, I'm not going to do it. I would show displeasure by calling up there and you could turn in your tickets or whatever. Now, if you want to call that a sense of boycott, knock yourself out.
I feel sorry for the NFL because they're caught up in the middle of something they didn't ask to be in. Because one guy started out by taking a knee during the national anthem, and then others, and then the president weighs in and says, you know, get that SOB off the field, right, and da-da-da-da-da. And then the NFL owners felt an obligation to, you know, let their players
Wait a second,
know.
But they always get caught in everything. You adapt.
In the middle of it, yeah.
The point is have they let... Who is running the NFL now? Are the teams, are the unions running it right now, or are the owners running it right now?
I guess the owners, but at the same time, there are people now boycotting the NFL on both sides.
Yeah.
You have people who feel like these guys should be able to take a knee boycotting the NFL. Those who feel that the owners should.
Yeah, go ahead.
The advertisers. Now, I'm calling a meeting of civil rights leaders. We do call for boycotts, and we may very well do it. So if Jerry Jones and advertisers don't think they're going to hear from the collective civil rights community, they ought to stay tuned. But suspending her will not suspend the action of those of us that are saying the original basis for the protest was police brutality and racism.
Yeah, first off, it wasn't. It was about oppression. Number two, do you really think those in the black community are going to sit and boycott a football game because of fantasy football? They buy their jerseys. I just don't see it happening, okay? I don't see it happening. More as we continue to move along, 904-222-8255, the issue of guns and where's this debate going. Republicans, even Congressman John Rutherford, may be disagreeing with the NRA. We'll talk about this in a few moments. Ed Dean, Roger Henderson, AJ Davis right here on WBOB. Ed Dean, AJ Davis, Roger Henderson right here on WBOB FM 101.1 AM 600. Here on the Ed Dean Radio Show, let's get to the clips. These write themselves. You don't need an SNL whatsoever. Here is, again, how many of y'all remember this? This just happened over the weekend. This was a few days back. John Dickerson from CBS News asking Dianne Feinstein about the Vegas shooting, Stephen Paddock, and all these. Would there been, because, you know, they're again, this is more about symbolism and then really addressing the substance here, about would there have been any laws that would have prevented this shooting? Clip number two.
Could there have been any law passed that would have stopped him?
No. He passed background checks registering for handguns and other weapons on multiple occasions.
So if he passed it all, then what type of law would have stopped the shooting? Here is Dianne Feinstein at NBC. This is with Chuck Todd at Meet the Press. She says, this is the state of America. She goes, we are a gun-happy country. Clip number three.
Well, the state is sad. America is a gun-happy country. And I think there are many of us in growing numbers that don't want a gun-happy country. Guns have their place. I don't have a problem if they're used properly. But what I have seen over the decades is a growth of substantial improper use of weapons.
Okay, now wait a second. Hold on, wait. Can we just, I don't want to play the whole clip. Can we just back up that one segment right there? I don't have a problem with gun. I have the improper use, kind of like what people have with guns.
If they're used properly. But what I have seen over the decades is a growth of substantial improper use of weapons.
If there's a growth of an improper use of guns here, Roger, my question is, then why not address the people? Why not address the individual mental health whatsoever? Mm-hmm. if it's not the proper use of the weapon itself, but the improper use of the individual, which she points out, then fine. I mean, why not go after what his background was, not about the guns or the gun store that sold him the weapons?
Yeah, I saw Dennis Prager on a TV show over the weekend. He made a very interesting and, you know, floated a very interesting idea, and that is this guy, of course, passed all the background checks.
You know,
apparently was not mentally ill, at least we could tell. And didn't have a criminal record, but he suggested maybe we should incorporate a new regulation in that if someone tries to buy a lot of guns at once over a short period of time,
right,
they get put on a watch list.
But the question is that over what, short amount, mid, or long period of time?
I'm not sure, but, you know, if someone starts stockpiling weapons, you see them buying, you know.
But, you know, a lot of people, you know, AJ and I were talking about this, a lot of people buy weapons because it's almost, for example, it is a value where you can buy them. And let's say, I remember when Clinton came in, people were buying XKSs and Russia guns and a lot of other, you know, 30-30s, and then they went up in value.
So they could be collectors.
That's exactly right. So they are, people do buy guns because you can turn around and sell them and make a profit.
But they wouldn't be stopped. They'd just be, you know, kind of observed.
Okay, let me throw another
one. Not my idea, Dennis Prager's.
Okay, let me throw another one out there. Let's say, for example, there's a big gubernatorial race going on in Virginia right now. Back in 1993, Doug Wilder, the former governor, passed the law. It was signed then into the state legislation, or state legislature, as legislation about only buying one gun per month. Now, I got a news for you. That doesn't jive with me. That doesn't sell with me. My point is, if you want to buy it as an investment, okay, then why not four guns a month? Why not five guns a month? I mean, where do you draw the line? Is it one semi-automatic, one automatic, one pistol, one rifle? What about a BB gun? What about a pellet gun? I mean, they can also do damage to somebody as well.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is where do you draw the line? As AJ just said, there are a lot of people that collect them. A lot of people that use them. I mean, what guns do you draw the line on to limit, again, one, two, three per month? You know? That's a question I would ask Prager and many other people out there. So, again, it is about the individual, as the liberal left has said. Here's David Frum from The Atlantic, who says, this is a publication, not The Ocean. He was on CNN. He says, for those of you out there that believe that guns make you safer, this is an illusion.
Because public opinion believes that guns make you safer. There are many illusions in this debate. One of them is that the great and good American people want gun control and are thwarted by a few selfish interest groups. Unfortunately, that's not true. The great and good American people believe, and that belief has been rising over the past 20 years, that guns make them safer. And it's just not considered politic to say the great and good people, American people, are wrong. They're wrong about that. They're mistaken. Guns are in the home, are dangerous.
All right, now back up. He says that guns don't make you safer. Now, listen to the analysis he tries to use here about guns in a home, that just suicides and shootings just doesn't make you safer.
But that they're mistaken. Guns are in the home, are dangerous. If you keep a gun in your house, you're putting your children at risk. Suicide, accident, homicide.
I mean, could you not be protecting your family as well, Roger, by having a gun at your house? What about the suicides of people that use knives? What about people that die of carbon monoxide and when they leave their vehicle running in a garage? What about a car that causes more deaths out there, a vehicular homicide and manslaughter? Does that mean that you ban all the vehicles out there as well because they're all in place at a home?
Mm-hmm. Good point. Very good point.
You know?
No easy answers.
I mean, what if you listen to a certain album that you don't like and you sat back and go, well, I'm just going to, you know, just pull the plug right now. Do you ban, you know, concert tickets to that album or whoever that may be? I mean, what if you listen to a recording of Wham or something? I don't know why you would kill yourself listening to a recording of Wham or anything like that, but you know what I'm saying? So, but I'm just saying is that you listen to these stupid comments by those out there, and I will tell you that guns do make a household much safer. We've talked, all of us have been news guys for years. And I will tell you, when you look at the Castle Law and the Baker and protect it, you know, protect your home, the guns don't make you safer. I don't know where these guys are getting their information from.
Yeah. Very, very, very interesting. I think I heard a report a while back that there was a certain county in Georgia that required all homeowners to have a gun in their home.
Yeah.
And robberies, burglaries. The rate there drops substantially.
Can you imagine, you know, where you go, for example, when I jog at night or I walk and you see these signs that say Sheriff's Watch or whatever, Now, some of those things absolutely mean nothing. They're just out there just for psychological, to hopefully that will stop you from coming in and invading people's homes. But can you imagine if there was a sign that says this is a – well, I guess gun-toting wouldn't be the right wordage. I think the word would be carry concealed weapons and trying to break it. I mean, here's the point to what you just said. I don't know if I would pass a law forcing each home to carry a gun. Right. I don't buy into that. But having said that, if you knew that this was a gun carry community or gun carry neighborhood, if you are a burglar, would you not think twice about breaking into that home because you have no idea who's carrying right there?
Right.
I mean,
move on to a different neighborhood.
That's right. This is almost like the argument of the concealed weapons versus the open carry. I prefer closed carry, I mean concealed in an open carry, because, you know, AJ and I have talked about this. I would like to catch the individual who wants to commit the crime right in the middle of the element of surprise. Because if he sees walking in, he says, "Hey, Roger, I see you have an open carry. Hey, guess what's going to happen? I'm not going to end up robbing that store. That means he's going to go someplace else. I want to catch the dude."
Mm.
All right? I want to catch them in the element of surprise. So when I listen to a lot of these guys talk about a gun, you know, we're a gun-happy country and all that, this is, and when they talk about, again, it's the individual, then fine, focus on the individual. If you don't believe there's enough money spent on mental health programs.
Well, it's got to be a mental health issue,
yeah.
Really. I mean, I think the people that are on this gun control side think without guns, it's going to be less violent. But
yeah.
That's not true.
Yeah.
Because the person that wants to create violence is going to use something else.
Can I ask a question? If you're going to have this same type of attitude, then what about, like, Jacksonville? What about, like, Pine Hills in Orlando? What about South Florida? What about certain areas of Tampa? Let's go further north. Let's talk about what takes place in Detroit and Baltimore. It doesn't matter what takes. What about the gun shootings there, the hundreds of gun shootings that take place that totally outweigh of what we see with a, quote, mass shooting? By the way, do you guys know that when there was three or four more killed inside a community, we read the reports from the FBI, that is considered, quote, part of a mass shooting out there.
Yep. Yep.
So I'm just saying this is that where do we show the same type of attitude? Because none of this has proven to work out there. So it's going to be interesting to see where all this goes. And again, this whole argument, and again, you know, when you're talking about being a gun-toting, you know, you're a happy place in this country and everything else out there, just doesn't make sense.
Could there have been any law passed that would have stopped him?
No, he passed background checks registering for handguns and other weapons on multiple occasions.
All right. So what law would have prevented that? And, of course, we will continue to move along as we cover this here on Yours Truly, Ed Dean. Coming up next, Colonel Michael G. Waltz, who is a Fox News contributor, is going to join us here. And we're going to be taking your calls at 904-222-8255, 904-222-8255. He, of course, covers a lot of this with the shooter. Any of this could have been prevented. I also want to talk about certain dynamics. Did he have any help? What's some of the news reports that we have seen, what we've heard? We'll get to all this here in just a little bit as we continue to move along. 904-222-8255, 904-222-8255. Email address is ed@wbob.com, ed@wbob.com. Roger Henderson. Raj.
Hey.
AJ Davis. See, AJ keeps it short. AJ Davis. Right here on FM 101.1 AM 600. This is The Answer. After the hour, good morning, Ed Dean, along with AJ Davis, Roger Henderson, the only morning show anywhere of its kind here in Northeast Florida. Ed Dean, right here on FM 101.1 AM 600 WBOB. We have our latest articles up, by the way, on some of the issues of guns. Sheriff John Rutherford, I always call him Sheriff, I do like the Sheriff, but he's a Congressman, John Rutherford, may be at odds with the NRA and this bump stock. So we got an interesting article. We like the Congressman. We don't throw him under the bus, but they may be at odds, and that story's up and ready to go. Go to WBOB.com and download the app. It is free. We're going to get to Colonel Michael G. Waltz here in a few moments. Let's get to some phones. 904-222-8255. Jeff, good morning. You're on WBOB. How are you?
Pretty good. I got the way I understand it, when the fascists or the communists take over a country, they automatically go around and they pick up the firearms from the civilian populations. And they outlaw freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, because they're dictatorships. And that's a track record the last roughly 100 years, the way I understand it. Maybe you can fill in the blanks, but I think the drug cartel south of the border, they smuggle guns as well as drugs. So if maybe you can fill in the blanks on that one also. Thank you.
All right, I appreciate the phone call. 904-222-8255. Let's squeeze in. We got a few more of these. I'm going to get to Colonel Walter in a few moments. Who do you want to go with? You want to go with, let's go with George? George, yeah. Good morning. Quickly, what's going on, brother?
Yeah, good morning. I worked in Korea. I worked also with Swiss engineers, and I know a fair amount about Israel. And those three countries follow the kind of standard, the methodology this country used when we start our ancestors started it, and that is that you have a National Guard, and it really it's a state guard, and often like with the Swamp Fox in South Carolina, it was somebody rich who helped his neighbors get armed, and they had a little local guard, and they watched each other. In other words, if somebody was starting to show mental symptoms, they'd kind of go in and counsel them on a local basis. It wasn't a bunch of liberal psychologists from liberal schools. It was a conservative military. And those three countries don't have any significant gun crimes. And that is what we should go back to. And the Democrats, the socialists, the communists hate National Guards, and they've been trying to do away with the National Guards and make them national. And they also hate guns. And so the snowflake journalists, of course, tell us that we shouldn't have guns, and that we should not have a National Guard, a local state guard. They hate the word militia. The word militia is in the Second Amendment.
Right, right. It's just the unfortunate part that of course, has been hijacked in many cases, and it's been used, like when you say you're a nationalist. Like, okay, that meant you used to be a populist. Now this somehow has been turned into a race issue. So I appreciate the phone call. Before we get to Colonel Walter, let's take another quick call. Let's go to Jeff. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Number one, the mental health issue regarding gun ownership. The entire scientific community doesn't know, 20% of the human mind? So that debunks that argument. There's no case for any type of mental disorder, so-called, because they can pick on anybody for that. Number two is our borders have been open for 30 to 40 years. No wonder there's an increase of gun violence. Just think about the billions and billions and billions of illegal drugs worth of dollars. You know what I mean? The drugs that are flowing into this country, they create a violent culture on the cities in this country.
Hey, Jeff, good point. Thank you for the phone call. Fast and furious. 904-222-8255. Colonel Michael G. Waltz, our good friend, is a Fox News contributor, author of the book Warrior Diplomat, served with Bush and Cheney, and he is a colonel, again, Green Beret commander. Colonel, good morning.
Good morning.
You know,
how are you?
I am good. You know, I don't know how to focus on a mental health, but, if I'm a gun owner and some guy's walking in with a little twitch in his neck, I think that probably sets up a red flag. But when you listen to a lot of these comments, I mean, I watched you last night on The Story with Martha McCallum, and you brought up some very interesting points. You've covered a lot of this in preventative maintenance, if I can use that word, on stopping the enemy out there. But yet, again, when you look at the psychological aspect of this guy, you pointed out, this was done very methodically with a lot of these on both sides, whether it's Republican or Democrat. They're just going down an aisle that has absolutely nothing to do with this story.
Yeah, look, you know, I am, as a special operator, as somebody who has set these types of ambushes up in combat and been on the receiving end of them as well, you know, I'm still astounded that this guy was able to pull off such a sophisticated ambush, supposedly alone, supposedly with no military background or training. Just to talk very quickly about the geometry of what he did, you know, there's this notion that kind of, you know, any average Joe could just get up there at a 32nd floor with a bump stock and spray into a crowd. But, you know, when we actually set these up, there's what we call a kill box. It's almost kind of like a spotlight going down onto a flat surface. And at that distance, you actually have a relatively small kind of circle or kill box that you have to get all of those rounds into. And you're shooting down a 1,000-foot kind of hypotenuse of a triangle. And if you vary at all by even a degree or two, and keep in mind, this guy's on full auto, you're going to spray those bullets outside of your kill box. So the fact that he was so calm and collected, he had been engaged by a security guard already, that he was on full auto, that he was switching weapons, that he was changing magazines, his adrenaline had to be pumping, sweaty, excited, and that he was able to put that many rounds that accurately onto 600 people with no background or practice or training, to me, is just, it's, I just find it incredibly hard to believe.
But you know something, Colonel, you've seen these movies, whether it's in, whether it's a Western, for, you know, whether it's like some of the John Wayne movies are a little bit more up to date today, where a guy will sit back and say, yeah, I modify the trigger. So like The Quick and the Dead with some of the stars, right, like Gene Hackman. Yeah, I modify the trigger so when I pull it out in a draw, it's less slippery. Or I redid the tip so I can get a much more accurate. I mean, whatever they want to call it here. And yet, if this guy had done what we just explained, like how Hollywood does it, again, they broke the law by doing what they did, and somehow by some form of some gun control with bump stocks, again, and watch the Republicans go down this road. I mean, like, really, somebody's going to vote you out of office because you decided to do something which really has no effect on the gun violence we have in this country?
Yeah, look, I don't see any laws that would have prevented this from happening. I mean, that guy, you know, as the sheriff in Las Vegas is saying, you know, he intentionally covered his tracks. He intentionally kept a low profile. They're having a very hard time digging into even to his background, and it's certainly not anything that a background check would have picked up. And you know, look, if we want to take a look at whether these bump stocks violate the spirit of the law, which I do think that the military and law enforcement should have the predominance of force, and that should automatic weapons, I think the current law is correct, that automatic weapons should be reserved for them. Fine, but at the end of the day, this guy set up an incredibly sophisticated, methodical, well-thought-out ambush, and that taking, you know, lawful gun owners' guns away isn't gonna fix, in my mind.
Colonel Michael G. Waltz, Fox News contributor, we are talking with this morning. Colonel, we always like to have a little fun in this radio show. We are not conspiracy theorists, but we always say we like a good conspiracy. What is the craziest one you have heard over the last 8, 9 days?
I don't have a good one on that, Ed. I bet you have a much better read on that than.
But I mean,
I do.
Go ahead.
And listen, and I want to be clear. I am not peddling conspiracy theories here,
right,
and I don't have any firm conclusions. But I can just tell you, as a special operator familiar with these weapons and how you set up these types of ambushes, and with all of that guy had going on, the other thing we didn't talk about, just the mechanics of it, and for gun owners and weapon owners, you know this, those barrels are going to get incredibly hot putting that many rounds out, which makes the round tumble and makes it less accurate. You also, at that distance, you have to compensate for the arc of the round. It doesn't fly straight, you know, once it's going that far. So there are so many things that this guy, he took all of those things into account.
All right.
Like an absolute
Let me
pro.
Ask a quick question. I've got 45 seconds. Was this guy really that good of a shooter, or there were just 20,000 plus people? He was 400 yards away. He had multitude of guns out there. Did he just spray everybody a chance, or was he really that good? What's the story on that?
Well, that's what I'm trying to get at. He wasn't necessarily that good, but he had to practice, or he had to have some type of background, and somebody, and that should have come up this far in. So the fact that he just walked up there, it's kind of like if you never touch a golf club and you walk up there and you whack a 300-yard drive.
Yeah, those guys absolutely tick me off.
I guess it's not as easy as it sounds to hit that many people with that many rounds at that distance.
Colonel Michael G. Waltz, his website, michaelgwaltz.com. He is a Fox News contributor. Colonel, it's always good to talk to you.
All right, thank you, Ed. Have a great day.
Good to talk to you. Coming up, hour number two, as we continue to move along, 904-222-8255, 904-222-8255. It is Ed Dean, Roger Henderson, A.J. Davis right here, FM 101.1 AM 600, WBOB.